From the center of the universe, Toronto, Ontario, Canada, this is the SDM Show with your host, Rob Cairns. The SDM Show focuses on business, life, productivity, digital marketing, WordPress, and more. Sit back, relax, grab your favorite drink, and enjoy the show. Here is Rob.
Hey, everybody. Rob Cairns here. I'm the founder, CEO, and chief creator of Amazing Ideas at Stunning Digital Marketing. In today's podcast, I am joined by my friend Jason Resnick, and we're going to talk about something that's really important in today's marketplace, and that's your email list and email marketing automation. So grab a drink, sit back and relax, and enjoy the conversation I had with Jason. Hey all, Rob Cairns here. Hope everybody's having a great day. Today I'm sitting here with my friend Jason Resnick, and we're going to talk a little bit about email marketing. Jason, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. You're such a good inspiration, and anybody who's following you on Twitter should, because you tweet out great stuff in the space. So how did you get... Yeah, you're welcome. How did you get into email marketing and into the space of what you're doing now?
That's funny. I never classified myself as email marketer at all. I still call myself a web developer because that's what I love. That's ingrained in me. But for me, I've always been an observer or a lover of human behavior. And when I started with my career, and this is the late 90s, I flocked towards e-commerce. And this is pre-Amazon. So like, you know, people were like, you want me to put my credit card into what? I'm not doing that, right? And so that was such an interesting challenge at that point in time where a lot of developers were like, I'm not dealing with that. Like there's too many moving parts there and that's a recipe for disaster. Whereas I was like, let me go. I want to go towards that because as a developer, now you're close to the bottom line. And if you can affect the business in a positive way there, well, then you're going to become an invaluable asset. But then it was like, I saw how email and the websites were disconnected a lot. And what I mean by that is like your website should always recognize that there's a customer, right? If the person sees things on the website that isn't related to what they should know, the company should know about that person because they bought from them or they're on a subscription with them or whatever, but the website looks at them like some random anonymous person, then that doesn't create a good experience. And that for me was always like a pet peeve, if you will. And I was using Drip at the time, and this was going back 6-7 years. And at that point in time, Infusionsoft was really the only one thing out there that was doing anything related to tying in your email subscribers data to being available to a website. Drip allowed for this, and their API was really easy to work with. And so I started messing around with that. And so that was the genesis of me saying, hey, I could make a huge impact by creating better experiences for the human beings that are using the internet and interacting with companies on the web to tie in their email to their experience on the inbox and then their experience in the browser. And so I've, for the most part, moved away from the web development side of things at this point in time. I have one client that I still do email web development, but for the most part, most of my clients are email marketing and automation. So I sit more on the side of the automation side versus the writing and copywriting.
Yeah, which is the same side I sit on. And I think one of the things that many businesses are missing is, as far as I'm concerned, there's only two things you own. One's your website and the other is your email list. What are your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I think, so it's interesting because I think social media has, in a lot of ways, you know, they say every year, they're like, email marketing's dead. Email marketing's dead. Doesn't work. Go this way. It's TikTok then. It's, you know, it's Snapchat. It's Twitter. It's Facebook, whatever. And social media has a place in business, but I think that place is more for the awareness side. And you don't own anything. You know, and we were just talking as we came on, you know, right before, like at this point in time, Facebook's down. Right? Yeah. So what about all of your followers? How do you touch them now? Like, how do you let them know? And so in this point in time, if you have an email list, you could actually send out an email saying, hey, this is what's happening. Just in case you tried, you know, we're in the same boat as you. Facebook's down, right? But if you don't have that level of interaction through an email list, depending on the kind of industry that you're in, you could be, your whole business could be done, right? Mm-hmm. It could be in the dark, your customers, your leads, everybody could be in the dark. They're not sure what's happening. They just know that they can't get access to you. Or in the case of a lot of people, especially coming out of the pandemic, and I'm sure you've seen this as well as I have, is that, you know, a lot of people were like bored at home. And so like, they're going to go on Instagram, they're going to go on Snapchat, and they're going to go on TikTok and create micro businesses on these platforms. Yep. Now, if that platform gets sold or they change the rules or anything, that could be it for you. Right. So I know that this isn't a saying that I have but it's like, you don't want to build your house on rented land, right? Like, own it, right? They own that. So figure out a way to cater to that need if that's where they are, but figure out a way that email, when somebody submits an email, now I use ConvertKit, but I have a backup of that email address as well. So if ConvertKit decides to fall off the planet, I can still reach out to this person, right? Yeah. So at the bare minimum, if you have an email address, you could still carry on that conversation. It's like the old school Rolodex, right? You know, if you have a way that you own to be able to communicate to people, then your business is still there.
No, I agree with you. And I'll give you a real life example of the rented land problem. I have had this ongoing problem on Facebook for the last 7 months, that every time I try and drop my own business domain into a post, Facebook comes back at me and says, this post has been blocked because you don't meet community standards. And this has been going on, and I've applied to have it removed. Well, as you laugh, it's gotten worse. Mm-hmm. I can no longer post any text on Instagram, which is the same ecosystem. I can post a picture. I can send a DM, but the minute I put any words in with anything public, it bans that too. Wow. And my suspicion has been somebody has marked my post as spam, probably a competitor. I would bet money on it. And which adds to it even more, because my domain's blocked, I can no longer run Facebook ads for my business if I wanted to. Now, fortunately for me, the Instagram, Facebook ecosystem is like 1% of the leads I generate. So it's not a big deal from that perspective, but that's just a real life example. Hmm. You mentioned you use ConvertKit. Before we get to, you know, how to build a list, why did you settle on ConvertKit versus any of the other multitude of platforms that are out there?
Yeah. So as I said, I started with email late. Right. That was and I'm not a regretful person by any stretch of the imagination, but the one thing that I do regret in my career is not starting email sooner. Mm-hmm. And so I started on MailChimp, and then moved to Drip quite quickly. And that was mainly because just a lot of limitations in MailChimp. The philosophy of having your email list, you know, your email address three times and being charged three times for me, it was ridiculous. Yep. So I moved to Drip, and Drip was fantastic. About a couple of weeks after I moved to Drip, I heard of ConvertKit. And so I was like, oh, interesting. And I was like, okay, there's a lot of similarities between these two platforms. But because I had already built a lot of my website tied to Drip, I wasn't really too keen on unwrapping that package and rewrapping it with something else. But I always kept an eye on ConvertKit. I always wanted to know what they were doing, how they were handling things, and just the feature set. And, you know, then I learned a lot more about Infusionsoft and ActiveCampaign and just working with clients under different ecosystems.
Yep.
But when LeadPages bought Drip, that was a pivotal point for me, because I was like, okay, I'm about to go. I had some business ideas wrapped around what I wanted to do with Drip. And to go back to that rented land thing, for me, I was like, I'm just going to hold back a second, because I don't know what LeadPages is going to do with Drip. And Drip was definitely catered towards, when Derek and Rob ran it, was catered towards the solopreneur or the startup space, the engineer. You know, they were very targeted around that kind of person. LeadPages took over. They changed the ecosystem. Basically, once Rob and Derek were officially done, they were like, okay, we're going after Shopify. We're going after e-com. We're going to go after, this is our target market. And everybody else that was there, for better or worse, they decided to move away from the needs of those people. And the needs of those people are the needs of me, the needs of my clients, features that we cared about, features that we needed. And ConvertKit was still there. And so it was a pretty easy move for me to decide where I needed to go. And ConvertKit still to this day caters to me and the clients that I serve in the best way possible.
And that's the key, to find something the best way. Have you looked at any of the email marketing software that's built on a WordPress backend? So I'm thinking of things like Fluent Forms. I'm thinking about MailPoet. I'm looking at a newer player to the scene, Groundhog. Have you had a look of any of those products?
Yes, I have. And I think they're all fantastic products by fantastic people. The thing that I don't like about it is that it's tied to your website like that. Okay. If you move away from WordPress, then what happens?
Then you have a problem.
Right. And so I like, and this is just one man's opinion. I like to keep things separate. And especially when it comes down to functions and stack of your business as individual components of the business. Yes, that causes some complexities and integration problems and things of that nature. However, when it's all in one and you put all your eggs in that one basket and that basket is too small and can't grow for you, then it becomes a problem, right? Mm-hmm. So case in point, I've switched off of WordPress 2 years ago for my site. And the reason why I did that was, one, performance. Two, at one point I had WooCommerce on there. I had subscriptions. I had a whole bunch of stuff on there. I was no longer needing that. And my site was just for my podcast and content at that point. I needed that to be super fast. And I didn't need all the bells and whistles that came along with WordPress. Essentially, not saying that I couldn't have optimized WordPress in a way, but the way that I work with my content, another platform called Statamic was better for that, because I wrote in Markdown. I could just deploy files up. I didn't need to carry the database with me. It was a static website, done, end of story. Had I had an email tied to that, well, that would have been a problem for me. So that's kind of how I look at that kind of stack. But I see the benefits also with clients. You know, clients are like, I don't want to have to remember all these different platforms and how to log into things and all of that. Yep. So I get that. But for me and how I run my business, as well as how my clients, you know, the types of people that I attract and work with, they like some sort of flexibility in their business to not be locked into one thing.
I understand. It's where do you draw that happy medium? And And I wholeheartedly get that. So I wanted to jump into a tweet that you put out this morning at the time of this recording, and you were sort of outlining five things you should do in your email marketing. And I read the tweet and I thought, geez, this is a great point of discussion for today's podcast. And we'll start it off by number one. You say you need to collect all addresses of people who actually want to hear from you. Mm-hmm. Do you want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. I'm not a fan of buying lists. I am a fan of opt-in marketing. And you want to collect, like I said, you want to collect addresses of people that actually want to hear from you, meaning that they came to your website or they came to your blog post or they saw you on social media and they want to get more information from you. And so it's as simple as that. And, you know, if you start doing that in a repeatable way, you're going to start to see where your opportunities are for your business and be able to communicate because those people want to hear more from you.
And do you think you need to offer them something like an opt-in or a freebie to get them on that list? Or do you think just saying, here's my list is good enough?
No, you definitely have to exchange value in whatever way. It could be a lead magnet. It could be something like that. It could be an email course. It could be a free webinar and training, a video that you created. There has to be some value exchange because I look at it like this. The email address is currency. Inbox is a sacred place for a lot of people. You know, me and you, we probably get like hundreds of emails a day, right? But for a lot of customers out there, like if they get 12 emails in a day, that's a lot for them, right? And so they don't want to create spam coming into them or anything like that. So you have to have something of value, but it also is an indicator for you, for your business, to know what people want to hear more about, right? So you could test different things. Like 1 month run, a lead magnet to, you know, something. The next month run a lead magnet to something else, right? And if those two things solve different problems and you had 100 come in on month one, but you only had 10 come in on month two, well, what do you think is more important in the eyes of your potential customers?
Yeah, it tells you in a nutshell. And your second point on that was learn how to tell stories. I think this is something that a lot of people don't get in emailing or any marketing is to actually tell a story.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and this goes back to what I was saying before. I'm a lover of human behavior and humans have been telling stories since the dawn of time. So, telling a story, especially these days, now I do email marketing for, on retainer for almost 10 clients and I've done hundreds of different clients over the years. And so when you tell a story, it creates that connection with another human being that is on the other side of the wire, right? And when you learn how to tell those stories, and look, you don't have to be a professional novelist. I'm not. I by any stretch of the imagination, I'm definitely, math and science brain. I had a college professor once ask me on a paper that if English was my second language, and he gave me a D+. I'm not a novelist. But if you tell a story in email, like you're talking to a friend and it's something that is interesting to that person, it creates this sense of curiosity, it creates value, and it could be just a couple of sentences strong, then that hooks somebody in to keep reading. And that for me has been the biggest key to, unlock the door of email marketing is to create those connections, those human to human connection points, to be able to unlock a lot of things, sales, referrals, testimonials, reviews, whatever you are looking for from your business. If you could tell stories, it makes that connection so much stronger.
I would agree with that. And it also, you know, we all like to read stories and share them. So that's a really good point. And then you go to, and this I think is a real biggie, send valuable content to your list. And I want to expand that and say the content to me is sometimes even more important than the headline. What's your thought on that one?
Yeah, because look, I'm with you on that, because you can have the most clickbaity, most attractive subject line, but if you're not delivering on the content, then people are just going to start ignoring the headlines, right?
Yeah.
You know, you have to send content to your list that's valuable to them, not valuable to you. Like I just ran through a 90-day challenge on YouTube, right? Where I published a video for 90 straight days. Burned myself out, I'll be honest. But what I found out from that test is that just because of the sort of anonymous nature of YouTube, you can start to see what resonates with people, the types of content that resonates with people. And I'll tell you, right off the bat, going into the challenge as well as in the challenge, I figured, hey, these things are going to pop. These are what people are going to be interested in. And these things, maybe not so much. Well, what I thought would pop didn't. And some of the other stuff is more important. So I'm like, interesting. Okay, so that's good to know. But that's the that's valuable to them, right? And so... Yeah. To understand that on the email side of things, because on YouTube, I could just see, take a look at the analytics, right? But on the email side of things is creating content that is clickable, right? So if the click rate went up on something, then you could start to see, oh, that's important. Okay, that's what they want to hear more about. So then write another email about that, and then another email about that, and see how your list resonates with that. And that'll actually tell you what's valuable to them.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And then we kind of move on, and this one also big, and it kind of drives me nuts that big corporations don't do this. Listen and reply to your subscribers when they email you. And one of the things that drives me nuts is you get an email from a big retail store, and the address says, do not reply at domain.com. And for me, that screams that you're just a number, and we really do not care about you. Thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I just think a lot of us that are probably the audience that here is that small business owners, and the small business owner needs to be able to, that's like your door to the store, right? Is your email. If somebody reaches out to you, just reply back. Even if they're not asking any questions, just say, hey, thanks for sharing. I'm glad you replied. And maybe here's another link to some helpful stuff based off of the email that they read and they replied to. So always being able to listen and engage your subscribers when they reach out to you, because that, to be honest with you, they will. And if you're not emailing because you're afraid that people are going to be like, oh, you know, you're terribly wrong, or, you know, I don't know why you think this way. How do you, you know, like that imposter syndrome creeps in. Sure, it does. When you plant your flag and you have an opinion about something, or you're telling like an experiment results that you've got and you send it out to the world, yeah, there might be some pushback, but that is also valuable content that you can then turn that back around and say, hey, you know, let's talk about this a little bit more. I'm curious to hear a little bit about your take on it. Be open to that, because that's only going to make you a better expert in the long run too. And your email subscribers are going to want to hear that as well.
I would agree with that. And then your last point is pretty self-explanatory. Repeat the process. So I want to jump on to one other thing. And you kind of in this list that you posted this morning, and I think it's a really big deal. People need to learn how to segment their lists and to do it on a regular basis. Because my theory is there's no point in sending an email to somebody that hasn't read your emails in 90 days. I like to take people like that and even before then and throw them in what I call long-term nurture sequence and then send them an email every so many days. It's not even my regular content. What's your thoughts about segmenting lists and that kind of thing?
Yeah, I'm a huge advocate of segmenting the list. Where I differ based off of what you said is, one, I send emails almost daily anyway.
Yep.
And I say almost daily, basically I take off on Sundays. Mm-hmm. But the idea is that long-term, what I do with the people that haven't engaged with me after a period of time is I send them through a re-engagement campaign. I don't want to create noise.
Yep.
And that re-engagement campaign is basically three emails that goes out and encourages them to click. And the last email says, if you don't want to hear from me, you don't have to do anything and I'll just remove you. And that's fine. However, where it comes down to segmentation is I like to try to figure out what their experience level is first. Mm-hmm. And this could be anything. Like if you're selling TVs versus providing development services as a WordPress plugin developer, the people that are coming into you have a certain experience factor with whatever it is that you are selling. So I would try to figure out what that level of experience is first, because that what you say to those people that are just barely touching the surface is very different than those people that are really advanced and about to buy from you, right? So if you could figure out what that is first, that's what I would try to ask. I would try to figure out what that question is, and ask your list that. And then in the emails that I write, that content shifts based off of that factor. I use Liquid Code, which is, what ConvertKit is built on, to basically say, hey, if your experience factor is beginner, say these three sentences. If it's intermediate, say these three sentences.
Yep.
If it's advanced, say these three sentences. And that's all that's what I do. But that is a huge level of customization that in the inbox creates a better human connection.
I would agree. And I mean, if somebody's, say, interested in men's sportswear, there's no point in sending them email for women's sportswear because that's just not an interest, right? You can create that customized experience there too.
Yes, but I would argue here, if you ask them if they were interested in men's sportswear, but then didn't send them an email about women's sportswear, they didn't say that they weren't interested in women's sportswear. They just said that they were interested in men's.
That's
so
right.
What I would do in that case is essentially send emails like Black Friday and all of the holidays are about to come up. If you want to sell something, ask them if they're interested in that, whatever it is that you want to sell. Right?
Yep.
And then those people that do say that, you send the emails to those people, the people that opted out, because that's essentially what they did. If they didn't show their interest, maybe you send them one email, but you don't bombard them for 14 emails over a 2-week period.
No, I would agree. And then the other thing that's kind of, and we were talking before we went to record, that's kind of convoluted this whole email marketing thing is Apple's latest iOS update. And there's mm-hmm. been a lot of discussion of the impact or the not impact. What is your take on that? How much has it impacted? Do open rates even matter anymore? That's even a bigger discussion. Mm. And what's your thoughts on that whole mess?
With respect to iOS's update, and dear listener, if you aren't aware of it, basically what iOS did was they're now blocking trackers. So you can't get the open reach, you can't get the geolocation, you can't get these things if that person opted into that protection. And I'll be honest with you that this isn't a new problem. This is a problem that nope. had been there already. I mean, there's platforms like Hey.com. There's software out there that blocks this stuff, yep. specific clients that block this stuff. But what Apple is doing is, because it's such a huge market share, it's like putting it on everybody's desk at this point, right? And so for me, I think that depending on your space, it could drastically affect you. Like if you're in D2C stuff and direct to consumer and you're a Shopify store and you're heavily on the Facebook ad side of things and all of those sort of components, yeah, you're probably going to be affected in some way, for better or worse, whatever. For me, I look at it like this, and it goes back to kind of like my core. And I have a saying in NurtureKit, which is my company, that says, when you treat your email list like humans, amazing transformations happen. And what that really means is that if you're relying on open rates to make your decisions, that's the wrong metrics to be making it off. It should be on an engagement. And an engagement mm-hmm. could be a sale. It could be a click. It could be a reply. And that's the human aspect. The open, I mean, software opens it. So the human may never even see it, right? And that's the problem with the iOS update, is that Apple is essentially opening the emails, disabling the trackers, and then passing it along to the human. And so that for me is like, okay, is email opens important anymore? I mean, you asked the question. For me, it wasn't as important before, because yes, you have to open an email in order to click on something and consume the email. But for me as a business, open rates only tell one story. If the open rate is less than 10%, then you know you were caught and flagged as like a spam email. And that was by software, right? So yep. You should know that before you press send out to the recipient list anyway. You should test these things. But from the perspective of iOS and all of the things moving from today into the future, it's just take a look at your business and your list. If you start to see fluctuations in your open rates, okay, but what are the clicks are telling you? What is some of the other metrics that are actually happening? Like when you send emails, what was it before today and what is it after, right? And like make your decisions based off of that. Open rates, again, goes back to before. You can have the best subject line, and that's all an open rate really does, is it tells the subject line. If you don't actually have the conversions off of that open, which are the clicks, the sales, and everything else, the open rate doesn't matter. Nobody wants an open rate of 100% and no sales. I'd much rather have an open rate of 15% and 17 sales.
No, I would agree with you. And the other thing you kind of draw to is, and we've sort of talked about in there, is open rate is not my favorite metric, but you need to know all your other metrics. And yep. I can't tell you how many times I've walked into a business owner and said, we start talking about email campaigns. And I say, do you know how many clicks you are? Oh, no, I just send out 500 emails. Do you know how many people are calling you based on your email? Oh, I don't know. And what people need to understand is the only way you can optimize your processes is to actually know what all your metrics are. And that, to me, for a small business owner, is a big problem, because a lot of them don't pay attention to stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I mean, I find the same thing that you found, you know, when I start digging into the numbers and they're like, oh, well, we've got a shopping cart abandonment campaign. Okay, that's great. Awesome. What is the conversion on that? I don't know. Like we're just sending the emails out. Okay. Well, let's start there. And let's track what that looks like and work backwards, because to know what, just because you're doing the mechanics of it doesn't mean that it actually works. And it could hurt if you're just doing the thing, because, and I don't know about you, but if I find people like that scenario where they're trying these things out, shopping cart abandonments or landing page abandonments, and then they're trying all of these automated lead scoring, click trigger kind of automations and all that stuff, and then when you dig in, like subscribers are getting like 7 emails a day, and I'm like, well, that's not a great experience, and you wonder why your email marketing isn't working. Like that's why, because you have all of these things that are work, like you have set up, but they're not aware of what's going on with each other. And you're not blocking things, and you're not thinking through things or even tracking things to know if it's working or not. And then, so you have a whole bunch of stuff going on and you don't really know what's going on. And the humans on the other side are just bombarded with a whole bunch of email that, yeah, they're probably, you might get a click or two, but it's not a great experience.
No, and the other thing people don't do on the building the campaign side, if it's actually automated, is they don't put checks in between. So, and what I mean by that is person A goes into a campaign and there's 10 steps in that campaign. A lot of marketers cannot tell you where that person is in that campaign. And the way I build mine out with things like tags built in the software and other ways is I can actually tell where people are in that campaign. And how do you measure if you don't know where people are or where they're stuck?
Exactly right. Yeah, you got to put the, I call them just like mile markers. You have to put mile markers in there to know where they are. Because like you said, if you have a 10-step campaign, if people are starting to convert on step 7, well, how do we get to step 7 to be step 3, right? And if you don't know that, then you don't know where they're converting, then you got to have people going through 10 steps all the time.
That's right. And you can't measure which steps within that campaign are working and which aren't because you don't know where people are.
Right.
So that's, I think it all comes down, Jason, to metrics. I mean, people, I say this a lot in this business, whether it's email, whether it's marketing, whether it's ads, is you have to know your metrics and the right ones if you want to optimize what you're doing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what I try to encourage all clients and anybody that I really talk to is set yourself up for your future self, right?
Yep.
Track things now, because it's easy enough to just set up, like you said, either a tag or a custom field or something like that, whatever platform that you're in, with the thing that you might think you might need later. Simple case is, which lead magnet did they come into first? Right? We know they came in through 7 different lead magnets. We can see that. But which one was first? And record that, because that is what's going to be used potentially later on to run an ad to, right? Because if you have 7 different lead magnets and you have one lead magnet that converts 45% of the customers, well, let's run an ad to that one, not the one that's converting 2, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you start to think about your future self and the questions that you might want to ask yourself into the future today, you can even just set those tags up while you're building out your campaigns now, and then take that next step in the future to say, okay, now that I have some of this data, what do I need to do to leverage the data that I'm getting to further the business?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, it's, and if you set it up now the proper way for moving forward, then you don't have to go back and redo stuff and put yourself in that position to start with, right? I mean, a lot of people, I find, even marketers, they throw it in, they get it working, and then they say, oh, I'll go back and optimize it later. No. Get it working properly now so you can use that to optimize in the future.
Yep.
I think that's the big deal. This has been a great conversation, Jason. If somebody wants to get a hold of you and talk email, what's the best way to get you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always open to a great conversation on Twitter. I'm at Rez with 3 Z's on Twitter, or you can visit my website, nurturekit.co, and drop into my email list there. I email on NurtureKit side of things 5 times a week, basically every weekday, no longer than 2 minutes. And they're actionable emails that is either email marketing and automation or how to write better emails.
Thanks, Jason, for your time. You have yourself an amazing day.
Thanks, you too.
Thank you. A very special thank you to Jason Resnick for joining me on today's edition of the SDM show. I really enjoyed Jason's insights and tips on email marketing automation. Thank you, Jason. Thank you for listening to this edition of the SDM Show. This podcast is brought to you by Stunning Digital Marketing. For links to Stunning Digital Marketing and Rob Cairns, please go to stunningdigitalmarketing.info. This podcast is dedicated to Rob's late father, Bruce Cairns. Keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars. Make your business succeed. Bye for now.